This podcast is brought to you by Money Control.
Hello and welcome to Digging Deeper with Money Control. I am Nazim Khan and with me is Santosh Nair, editor of Money Control. Today we are going to cover the NSE co-location controversy. Recently, SEBI came out with an order penalizing NSE, several individuals and companies of various violations with respect to the co-location facility. So what is this co-location facility? What exactly happened in the co-location case? And who all have been named? We will speak with Santosh to find out. Santosh, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nazim, for having me here.
So what is the NSE co-location controversy all about?
So Nazim, it's alleged that some brokers had faster access to the price feed, which was distributed by the National Stock Exchange to all its members. Now, the price feed here basically is an aggregation of all the buy and sell orders. Now, a whistleblower had written to SEBI sometime in January of 2015, explaining the flaws in NSE's co-location system and how some brokers had exploited those flaws by colluding with some employees of the stock exchange.
Okay, before we go into the details, can you tell us exactly what is a co-location facility?
Okay, so this co-location facility was introduced by the NSE in August 2009. What this is basically is that it allowed brokers to place their servers in the data center of the National Stock Exchange. Of course, there was a charge for this service and only the big brokers could afford it. Now, the benefit of co-location is that it allows a broker to access the price feed faster distributed by the stock exchange. That is because the broker's server is sitting right next to the stock exchange server, and so the data from the exchange server has only to travel a very short distance to the broker server. So Nazim, let me put it this way. Let's assume that two friends were having a race from Bombay to Pune in their respective cars. Both are taking different routes. Now, who reaches Pune first? It will depend on three things. One is how powerful the car is, how smooth the road is, and then which route they take. Now, there are two ways to get to Pune. You could either take the old highway or you could take the expressway. So, the expressway, since it's a much straighter path, obviously gives the advantage, all other things being equal. If, let's say, both were driving the same make of car, and if the roads were smooth in both cases, still you would reach faster traveling by the expressway because it's a shorter route and a straighter route. So this is what the broker who opted for a co-location facility had. The broker's computer needs to speak to the stock exchange trading system. Yes. If the servers then are located very close to each other, you know, the information only has to travel a short distance.
That's interesting. So Santosh, just to clarify things a bit, is there anything illegal about the about an exchange offering a co-location facility per se?
No, there is nothing illegal because even world over, stock exchanges provide a co-location facility to brokers who are willing to pay for it. Now, the NSE has done nothing illegal by offering co-location services. However, the introduction of this facility was not transparent. So SEBI usually puts out a discussion paper to seek the views of market participants on major policies like these. Now, in this particular case, SEBI did not take the feedback of market participants before allowing NSE to offer co-location facilities to its broker members. So this is a bit controversial. But the more important point is that of fairness. You know, world over, there's been a debate on whether exchanges should discriminate between those who can pay for faster access and those who cannot.
Sure. So, okay. So just to understand the difference, what is the time lag that will be there between a broker who has a server in the co-location facility versus someone who does not?
Okay. So the difference actually is in milliseconds. It's something the human eye cannot even catch. But it can make all the difference between a profitable trade and not being able to see the trade at all. Mm-hmm. So let's say you are a trader, right? If you get a quote faster than the next broker, obviously you'll be able to execute that trade faster. You've seen the order before he has managed to see it. And if, let's say, you want to buy or sell that stock, you'll be able to act on it much faster. So even though the gap is in milliseconds, it makes a big difference. Okay. The person who sees the order first will be able to execute it, as compared to the person who sees it with a gap of even a few milliseconds.
Sure. So essentially, we're saying that NSC introduced the co-location facility in 2009, I think.
Yes.
And the concept per se is not illegal, but the manner in which the NSC rolled out the facility was such that some people would have had some advantage in executing their trades. That is correct?
Yes, Nazim, that's right. So there's nothing illegal as such about the introduction of the co-location facility. And yes, it did give advantage, certain advantage to those brokers who opted for it.
Sure. So, Santosh, the whole controversy is referred to as the NSC algo trading scam. So, is that the right description?
Well, Nathan, technically it cannot be called an algo trading scam. Now, algorithmic trading or algo trading is a method of executing a large order using pre-programmed instructions. So, for instance, let's say somebody wants to buy 10,000 shares of Reliance Industries. Now, he doesn't want to. Now, of course, Reliance Industries is a very liquid stock. So even if you were to buy 10,000 shares, it won't make so much of a difference. But let's say he were to buy some other stock which is not very liquid. Now, if he goes and tries to buy the 10,000 shares at one go, the price might just shoot up. So he can put, he can run an algorithm which says that every half an hour, buy it in blocks of 500 or 1,000 shares at a certain price. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's just one of the instructions. It could be anything. These instructions are based on many variables such as time, price, volume. Similarly, while selling, you may not want to sell the entire batch at one go. You might want to send small slices of the order into the market.
Sure.
In general, it could be algorithmic trading per se could be a fast strategy or it could be a slow strategy, as opposed to high frequency trading. Now, that's a different ballgame altogether. In this case, the orders are sent out rapidly into the market. So many years back, there used to be broking firms which would do arbitrage trades. So what they would do was they had people sitting in front of two computer terminals. One had the price feed of NSE, one had the price feed of BSE. So continuously, these people, they were known as jobbers. They would keep monitoring the screen. So if the prices were higher on the BSE, they would sell on the BSE and very quickly buy it on the NSE. They would keep doing it very rapidly. Mm-hmm. But there's still no match for an algorithm which can do the same thing many times over. So by the time a jobber is able to do execute such a trade once, mm-hmm, the machine can do it maybe 10 times, because at any point there will always be a slight difference in the prices on two exchanges. So this is just a basic example I'm giving so that the listeners can understand what exactly is high frequency trading.
So if I'm right, high frequency trading is a sort of a subset of algo trading.
Yes, that would be the right way to put it.
Okay. So what happened in the NSE co-location case exactly?
Okay. So 3 months after it introduced the co-location facility, NSE started offering tick by tick market data. Now, tick by tick market data means every single order that is placed by any trading member sitting in any corner of the country, brokers sitting in the co-location facility could have access to that. Now, your own hardware has to be very powerful to process this kind of exhaustive data. So,
yeah.
So very few brokers actually, so only those brokers who had the money to pay for co-location, who could afford the co-location facility, typically they were the ones who had very powerful computers and opted for the tick by tick data. So that gave access to very comprehensive data. So when you say tick by tick data, it means that that tick could be a buy or a sell order. Mm-hmm. It could be an order which has been cancelled. So you would get to know that also.
Okay.
If an order was modified by some other trading member, you would get to know that also. So for an average trading member, maybe he doesn't need access to so much of data. It may not be relevant. But for those who run algorithmic trading at any point of time, he would want to know what is the depth in a stock. Has there been any change in the order book? These things make a big difference.
Sure.
And more importantly, this data feed was distributed through an architecture called Transmission Control Protocol. So it was TCP/IP. That was the architecture. Now in this kind of distribution, what happened was the information would be delivered one by one. this is unlike a broadcast, mm-hmm. where the information would be simultaneously delivered to all the brokers who were logged on to those co-location servers. Okay, and again, this data was distributed sequentially, mm-hmm. which means that if one broker had logged on to a particular server first, he would get the information first, as opposed to somebody who had logged in second or third. It's only after the first in the queue saw that data, would okay. the other people, the other members who were logged on to the system, get to see that.
So let's say the person who logged on at 7 a.m. in the morning would get it before the person who logged on at 7:30?
Yes. Also, it depended on the load on each of the servers. So if too many brokers were logged on to one particular server,
okay,
that server would be a crowded server.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So brokers who were logged on to servers where there were few other members logged in, that would be a less crowded server. So he would get access to the price feed even faster. So even after you're logged on first, there is also an advantage if you're logged on to the server with the least number of connections.
Okay. So there is one broker in particular, I think OPG Securities. So he is, this broker is seen as someone who was very well aware of the workings of the exchange or the co-location facility, right? How was OPG able to game the system? OPG's name came up quite a few times in the SEBI report.
So in the whistleblower letter, it was alleged that OPG had help from some officials in NSE's IT department. So he was able to figure out which server was crowded and which ones weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And also he was able to find out, you know, what time the servers would start disseminating
mm-hmm.
The information.
Okay.
So that advantage was very crucial. That was the allegation against him. Okay. So brokers availing the co-location facility are given details of the servers to which they should they are supposed to log on so that they can get access to the price feeds.
Mm-hmm.
Now investigations reveal that many brokers used multiple IP addresses to connect to those servers. Typically, there would be a certain limit. You just can't log in from anywhere.
Sure.
So there are a definite number of devices from which you could connect to that particular server.
Okay.
So there has to be a certain restriction on that. But mm-hmm. in this case...
In the case of OPG.
Yes. And some other brokers as well. They used multiple IP addresses to connect to those servers. So IP is a unique address that identifies a device on the internet. Now OPG Securities is allowed to have mapped multiple IPs mm-hmm. to a single server.
Okay.
In such that he was number 1, 2, 3 in queue on that particular server. So he had a very clear advantage. So even after the data was disseminated beyond the first person who had logged in, it would still come to him itself.
Sure. So, just to summarize whatever we've discussed so far, the rollout was obviously faulty, and OPG and a few other brokers were able to get access to the price feed faster than the others who were also connected to the co-location system by virtue of having multiple IPs and by also having knowing the patterns of the servers.
Right, right. And there were no policies or procedures for mapping of the IPs of trading members to the exchange servers. And also, there was no standard operating procedure to deal with requests for a change in IP mapping. So often brokers would say that, you know, please give us map us to a different server because we are not getting the feeds fast enough. So ideally, there should have been a detailed procedure for that.
Okay.
You know, somebody has to approve that. And, you know, there was no such thing at the NSE. Now, not just this. The other allegation was that OPG Securities would also regularly connect to the secondary server.
Mm-hmm.
This is commonly known as the backup server. And
okay.
this, because it was only to be used when the primary servers were not working, this had very little load because you were not supposed to connect to that.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, OPG regularly connected
to the backup server.
To the backup server. This is like something that there's a separate road which is just open for ambulances and fire engines, right?
Sure.
And you're not supposed to use that unless
there's an emergency.
But it was like, you know, people were
this
using
guy figured
this.
Out the way to use that also.
Yes, and he was using that regularly, and the NSE took no action to prevent this, despite knowing that he was doing it regularly.
So, Santosh, what are the allegations that the whistleblower probed, and what were the key findings of if there was any investigation?
Yeah, so the allegations were probed by the Technical Advisory Committee of SEBI and later by Deloitte India. Deloitte was appointed by the NSE board. Now, the Technical Advisory Committee concluded that NSE's tick-by-tick architecture was prone to market abuse. Thereby, it compromised the market fairness and integrity by providing quicker order dissemination to those who managed to log in early.
Okay.
And it also said that it was very likely that OPG and some other brokers were given preferential access backup servers of the NSE tick-by-tick system. This is broadly what the Deloitte India report also says.
Okay. So, could the NSE have negated the advantages that some brokers had by, you know, by connecting to the least crowded servers? How was it technically, how could they have managed it technically?
Yes, if NSE had a load balancer system in place, maybe this abuse would not have happened.
Okay, and what's a load balancer?
So this basically distributes traffic load across a number of servers, again based on algorithms like least connection, least response time. And it what it does is that it basically ensures that the load is equally distributed. So for instance, there was a limit of 30 connections for each port of the server from which NSE disseminated the price feeds to its broker members. But in practice, this limit was not followed, and often the number of connections on one port exceeded 30. So a load balancer would have clearly helped.
Okay, so it would have evenly sort of distributed the traffic across the servers.
Correct, and reducing the advantage that some brokers
had. And why did NSE not implement the load balancer?
Well, the NSE stand was that if you put a load balancer, that would have introduced an increase in time lag. That's because you're putting one more additional hardware device. So there'll be an extra step through which the data now needs to flow.
Okay, okay. And the other bit is the brokers that were logging on early. Is there anything that the NSE could have done about that?
Yeah, if it had used a randomizer, if it had a randomizer in place, this advantage again could have been negated. A randomizer, as the name suggests, would randomly pick a connection to begin dissemination of data, rather than starting with the first connection each time. So even if five people are logged on, a randomizer would just pick one of them at random. Otherwise, you know, the way the system was that the person who had logged in first would always get the price feed first.
So did the NSE ever plug this loophole?
Yeah. So in April 2014, the exchange introduced the multicast protocol transmission. This basically meant that all brokers would have access to the tick-by-tick price feed simultaneously.
That's interesting. And then, so essentially you had 5 years during which brokers could just basically have a lot of advantage over others.
A free pass.
Sure. You talked about the backup server. So how were they, you know, how were the brokers able to do that?
So when the approval, the brokers got the approval for co-location facility, they would also be given details of the secondary server.
Okay.
And also the secondary server was live. Typically, a secondary server should have kicked into action only when the primary servers were not working. It's almost like there had to be a barricade on that road where ambulance and fire tenders were allowed to pass.
Yes.
But in this case, there was no such demarcation. So the brokers knew the details of the secondary server, and at will, they would keep logging onto it. Now, sometimes they would say that we are just testing it. But there was no way the NSE could have found out whether they were genuinely testing it or abusing the system.
So if it was so obvious, why did the other brokers not access their secondary server?
So many of them did initially, but then the NSE's IT department warned those brokers. Interestingly, some brokers, when they were warned, they just stopped doing that. But many others, despite being warned, continued to do that, and NSE did not take any penal action against them.
So brokers such as OPG, for instance. Okay, so what is SEBI's conclusion finally?
SEBI has ruled that basically NSE has failed in its duty to ensure a level playing field for the trading members who had subscribed to its co-location facility. However, SEBI feels the exchange cannot be charged with fraud because they don't have proof of any collusion of employees with brokers, or proof of some brokers having been discriminated against, or some NSE officials or brokers having gained financially because of the lapses. Also, SEBI feels that failure to have a randomizer or load balancer cannot be seen as a breach of the principle of fairness and equity. So, SEBI has said that NSE cannot be held guilty under the provisions of fraudulent and unfair trade practices. But at the same time, it said that the exchange did not exercise the requisite due diligence while putting in place the tick-by-tick architecture. Mm-hmm. Also, its policy on retention of electronic records were quite weak. They should have ideally had data of people who were, you know, logging onto the secondary servers or requesting for a change in servers. So all those records had to be kept, but NSE never kept them. As a result, the exchange has been ordered to disgorge a part of the profits made from the tick-by-tick data dissemination between financial year 2010-11 and financial year 2013-14. So that works out to 625 crores. Plus, there is an interest of 12% from April 2014. In addition, NSE has also been barred from accessing the securities market for 6 months.
So SEBI has levied a fine of 625 crore or, you know, asked for that money to be disgorged. But do you think this is enough, or do you think, I mean, do we have an estimate of the size of the fraud?
Well, Nazim, there are all sorts of numbers being talked about. For instance, even the whistleblower says that the scam is to the tune of around 50,000 odd crore. But in its investigation, SEBI has not really found proof.
Quantified an amount.
Yeah, they have not quantified an amount. So that's where things stand right now.
Okay, but would SEBI not have been able to sort of backdate or backtest the data and find out what was the amount that was may have been sort of made?
Well, some simulations were done, but they have not conclusively proved that the person always logging in first had the advantage.
Okay, so it's very interesting. If you look at the scam, the people who have been affected do not really know that they have been cheated, right?
Exactly.
So as a result, there will not be a lot of outrage, because people have been, it's sort of a systematic gaming of the system, but nobody really knows that he has been gamed.
Yes, exactly. But clearly a lot of people would have been affected. So for instance, let's say a mutual fund which wants to buy a big chunk of shares, right? So if every time it ends up paying even 50 paise more, that would collectively add up to a fairly big amount.
Alright, thanks Santosh for joining in and explaining the NSE co-location case in such detail.
My pleasure, Nazim.
Where did OPG and other players get the algorithm in order to try and take advantage of the faster price feeds? Who are the other players involved in this controversy? All of this we will cover in another episode of Digging Deeper with Money Control. Stay tuned and thanks for joining in.